Kia ora, welcome to Airmen's Podcast, episode 346. Today is Tuesday, April 30, 2019. I have a confession to make. The only reason I'm podcasting today is because it's the last day of April, and if I don't podcast today, that means I won't have any podcast episodes in April. Be that as it may, April has been a very busy month, and today I'll update on some of those things anyway, starting with why it was so busy. This year, there was the happy coincidence that Easter weekend happened to fall a few days before Anzac Day on April 25th. And that means, because Good Friday is a public holiday, and Easter Monday is a public holiday, and Anzac Day morning is a public holiday, although most people get the whole day off, that means that if workers took off Tuesday and Wednesday of that week, and then Friday of that week, they would have 10 days off in a row, but only use 3 of their annual leave days to do that, which is a pretty sweet deal, really. So that's what we did. And 2 weeks ago today, actually, I went and picked up Nigel's mom and brought her up to stay with us. And she stayed with us until Easter Sunday when we took her up to Nigel's sister's house, where she stayed for a few more days. And so we had a nice long break. We didn't do very much of anything. We didn't leave the house very much. Mostly we just sort of pottered around. We worked on some of our own little projects and just kind of relaxed and had a very nice time on break. And that's really all there was to it. But that's 10 days out of the month. That's a third of the month was gone in that with that one thing. And then in addition to that, of course, I had work to do and I had all sorts of other bits and pieces going on. And I just didn't have time to podcast. So there are a few other things that happened this month. In the last episode, I talked about the government moving to ban military-style assault weapons. That ban has been passed by Parliament and is now law, signed by the Governor General. It was about, 2 weeks or something, three weeks, I think, after the terrorist attack in Christchurch. So that was pretty rapid progress. And during the process, there were people saying, oh, we should slow it down, which reminded me, quite frankly, what you hear in America every time that there's a mass shooting. Oh, we can't act now. We have to take time and think about these things. And of course, nothing ever changes. Well, here they said, nah, we're going to change it. And they did. The vote was unanimous, apart from one MP from the neoconservative or neoliberal, depending on your point of view, party called the ACT Party, the one-person MP party. And he opposed it on procedure because he thought it was too fast. And there weren't enough exemptions or something or other. He sort of made a clown of himself, again, because he was talking about how he was going to slow down the process. And he went out on the forecourt of Parliament, the front of Parliament, and he was talking to the media about how he was going to stop the measure. And because he was doing that, he missed the chance to do so in the House, and it went ahead despite his apparent objections, unless he planned on that on purpose. I don't know. At any rate, he voted against it in the end. But it was all for naught because the other 119 members of Parliament voted for it on April 10th, and the bill was signed 2 days later on the Friday. And that was that. The measure became law. And now they're working out the details of the buyback scheme because they will buy back weapons and relevant bits and pieces from the owners, and they have to work out what the fair price is going to be and all those sorts of things. But that's still to come. And there have been people who have been upset by it. Not quite the people you would think, by and large. It's mostly been competitive shooters and people like that. And apparently there is this competition that's held with people running around with automatic weapons and firing and stuff and whatever. So they're very upset that they won't be able to represent New Zealand at these things. And quite frankly, I think the reaction of the majority of New Zealanders is, that's very sad. You probably need to have a new hobby now. Because it's not a good enough reason to allow ordinary people to have automatic weapons. Now, if they want to lobby for a special exemption because of their activity, that's a whole different matter. But it's certainly not sensible to have the weapons have remained legal just because they take part in some sort of international competition that isn't Olympic or anything like that. So I don't know. I'm not particularly sympathetic to them, but other people maybe. That's not my issue. Among the other things that happened last month, or this month actually, earlier this month, you may have heard or recall that the government of Brunei, which is a teeny tiny little country in Southeast Asia region, has decided it's going to implement brutal Sharia law in their country. Now, a lot of it had been only for Muslims, but the thing that caught the world's attention was that they're imposing the potential, at least, for the death penalty for people convicted of having gay sex or of adultery. And that will that the people who are subject to that are both not only Muslims, but also foreigners and even children. And it was condemned by a lot of people. George Clooney got a lot of press for his very strong condemnation of it and calling for a boycott of the hotels owned by the country's autocratic leader. New Zealand's response was tepid at best, and actually was pretty shockingly bad, to be honest. And part of the reason I'm mentioning this is because I want to disabuse people of the notion that I'm never critical of the Labour Party or the current government, because in this particular case, they got it completely wrong, and their response was woefully bad. And so I'll put a link in the show notes to my blog post about that, because it was a really, really shocking error on their part. Not surprising. They weren't the only country that had a weak response, but it was really bad. And the main reason is that Brunei is the fourth largest exporter of petroleum in the Southeast Asia region, and New Zealand buys a lot of oil from them. And as we all know, companies with petroleum exporting countries can do pretty much whatever they want and get away with it. Nobody's going to hold them to account, unless you happen to be Iraq and get invaded for your oil. But by and large, if you're an oil exporting country, you can do whatever you want. And with impunity. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia. That's a prime example. But there are plenty of others that are in the same boat. And so most of the world's countries aren't going to do anything but wag their fingers at Brunei for the brutality. And when they do execute their first people for being gay or for having supposedly committed adultery, then you can be sure there'll be more finger wagging and tut-tutting and all that sort of thing. But nothing will change. They won't do anything. They never do. They wouldn't do it even if it was very popular segment of society. I can't think of what that would be. But the fact that it's adulterers, which people seem judgmental about even if they don't really know what that means, and certainly gay people, if those are the main victims, they'll probably won't face any serious consequences, because that's just the reality of the world we live in. And that's not, you know, being awful about the world. It's a reality. And I think we need to realize that. And there's not much that us ordinary people can do to make Brunei act responsibly and act as if it belongs among the family of nations rather than as an outlaw. We have no pressure, because the Sultan's hotels are these luxury hotels that the vast majority of us would never stay at anyway. I suppose that if we belong to some sort of professional organization that decides they're going to have an event at those hotels, we can refuse to go and tell them why. But that's about it. That's about all that we individuals can do. We can put pressure on our governments to put pressure on them, but that's not going to change anything. The only thing that's going to change it probably is if the Sultan is toppled by his people. And that doesn't seem very likely anytime soon either. So I just think we're going to have to accept the fact that there will be executions, and there's nothing that we can do about it. In happier news, I don't know why I said that, because I don't actually have happier news to share, but I'm just trying to change the subject. But I was actually looking through my blog post for this month, which is one of my better months, actually is the best month so far this year, and to see what I had talked about so far this month, and that was actually one of the things, obviously. And there are a lot of things this month that I saw that just made me kind of go, huh? More than it was, criticisms or explanations or what have you, although there were plenty of both of those. Jake turned 12 this month on the 4th, which was always a fun thing to celebrate his birthday, even though he has no idea what we're on about. But be that as it may. And it's been, other than that, I mean, it's been a very busy month, but not a particularly full month, if that makes any sense. Somehow I've managed to fill up all of the time that I had available to me, and yet there's not a whole lot to report about it. There's not a whole lot of really interesting or important things that have gone on this month or that I've done this month. I had my 12th Twitterversary. That's got to be important, right? Although, actually, that is a bit of an aside, because I joined Twitter after I joined MySpace and before I joined Facebook. And all of those were originally so that I could promote this podcast. That's the whole reason I got into social media in the first place, was to promote the podcast. It didn't quite work out that way, but that's what it was. And I don't use Twitter very much anymore because I find it too annoying. But nevertheless, it was 12 years this year. And the most recent news story that has come out is that the New Zealand census is a full-on disaster. And the reason for, well, there's a lot of reasons for that. But the gist of it is that there was an extraordinarily high non-response rate in the 2018 census, our most recent census. Roughly one in seven New Zealanders either didn't complete the census at all, or they didn't. They started it and didn't finish it, either or. What that means is that a lot of the data is completely unreliable, and Statistics New Zealand, which is the government department that looks after it, we call it Stats NZ, has tried to fill in the gaps with data from other government sources, which means the reliability of that data is kind of iffy at best. And the census is used for, well, in all countries, it's used for the same sorts of stuff. It's used basically to find out where people live, what needs they have, all those sorts of things, what the long-term trends seem to be, so that governments can make decisions about things like where they're going to spend money, what they're going to spend it on. For local governments, it means where parks go or where roads need to be widened. For central government, it means where are we going to need to build new schools? Where are we going to build new hospitals? Do we need to expand state highways? Where, and more importantly of all, quite possibly, are where are the boundaries for the election districts, we call them electorates, going to be drawn? Because they're based on population. And it's not sure that their data is going to be good enough to be able to draw the boundaries correctly. And some people are suggesting that we should use the existing boundaries until after the next census, which is in 2023. I'm not sure that that's the best answer. Let's see what they come up with as their data and see how robust it is. But it's really a bad situation. And among the data that we're not going to have is a lot of basic stuff about households and about people's activities, like smoking, for instance. We're not going to know what the trends are with that. So that means the government is going to be shooting in the dark when they decide what they spend money on to help people quit smoking or where the problem areas are and so on. They're not going to know. They're just going to have to guess. And we're also not going to know about religion. And that's been an issue that I've followed closely for years now, because New Zealand is on the precipice of becoming a majority non-religious country in terms of self-identification we're talking here. At the moment, New Zealand has a bare majority of people who claim to be religious or say that they are religious. And of those, most people claim to be Christian. Only about 6% of New Zealanders claim to be something other than Christian, a religion other than Christianity. And so we've been expecting this to happen for years. That's Sunny in the background, if you hear her. We've been expecting this to happen for years. We thought it might happen in 2010. It didn't. 2013, we thought, well, this is a pretty good shot, but maybe not, and it didn't happen. And then we thought it might happen in 2018. Well, we'll never know now, because the data is apparently so bad and so unreliable that we're not going to be able to draw any conclusions about anything. So maybe the 2023 census we'll know one way or the other. But the reason that this matters, all of this, it's not just about religion, but all of this basic demographic stuff, is it tells us who modern New Zealand is, yes, and also how it's changed over time, what the trends are. And that sort of thing matters for other kinds of public policy. For instance, when the Marriage Equality Act was going through Parliament, or actually even before it got very far, there was worry that the religious right would raise up its head, or the religious people, not just the right, would raise up their head and stop it completely. Well, that was unlikely. And the reason we knew that that was unlikely was because we knew from census data that religious adherence was falling steadily. And the only exception to that was among fundamentalist Christians in particular, who were pretty steady overall and in some cases even increasing slightly. But overall, New Zealand was becoming much more secular over time, much more non-religious over time. And that meant that it was unlikely that religious arguments were going to get very far in that particular debate, and we were right. They didn't. All of the arguments that were made were religious-based, and it didn't play in modern New Zealand because people just don't buy that stuff anymore. You've got to have a better argument than just because your Bible tells you so. And they didn't, and so they lost the issue. It really is as simple as that. And so this sort of data is important for anybody who cares about public policy or politics to know what is going on. And household data, if you're into electoral politics, party politics, demographic data is really important for seeing where different ethnic groups are moving around the country. And that's important if you want to tailor your message to specific ethnic groups, like, say, Maori or Tongans or whatever it might be. That's one of the best ways to do that, is if you know where they are, then you can target your messaging. But without accurate data, you just can't tell. And so, unfortunately, that's where we stand. We don't know what the shape of 2018 New Zealand looked like because the data is so bad. There is a commission of inquiry, an official inquiry, independent inquiry, that's what it's called. It's looking into what happened, why the census went so wrong. And that's not due to report back until sometime in July. But there are two main suspicions among us common folk at the moment. One is that the previous national government cut funding for the census in their budget, and that matters because they wrote the budget that ultimately funded the census in 2018, and the planning was done well before then. It's done like 4 or 5 years before the census, and or up to 4 to 5 years. And the other factor is that in 2018, partly as a cost-saving move, the census was done entirely online. They didn't have a mass distribution of paper forms. And that probably accounts for the large number of people who didn't even try to start the census or who never completed it. And there are large percentages of New Zealanders who have no computer access. So it's kind of iffy whether or not they were going to be able to successfully complete it one way or another. I don't know. Hopefully this will all come out in the inquiry and it won't just be a whitewash or something. We'll know soon. But as you can probably tell, I'm not optimistic about any of this. It's very disappointing and very frustrating that the richest and most reliable source of demographic data we have about the people of New Zealand has been lost, essentially. And we won't get any more until after the 2023 census. And it's very discouraging. But the bigger issue is not that. So we're frustrated and disappointed. Big deal. What really matters is that at all levels of government, central government, Wellington, and also local governments throughout the country are going to be shooting in the dark about what they need to do to meet the needs of the people, because they're not going to be able to know. They can make some educated guesses, probably, based on previous censuses and census trends, and maybe some anecdotal evidence here and there to kind of help them kind of intuit what's going on. But the reality is they won't have any hard, fast, and reliable data on what's happening with the way people are living, where they're living, all those sorts of things. And they're going to be making their decisions about how to spend tax money in the dark. And that's never a good thing. So, but those are the main stories that I've been following over the past month. And that's really the gist of it. Like I said, it's been a fairly slow month, but one that's nevertheless been full. And I don't And I still don't quite know how I managed that. I'm still in awe of myself. That's not literally true. I'm just making that up. But that is really all I wanted to say today. I wanted to update a few things I've talked about before and also a few things that happened this month, because I know if I didn't podcast today, not only would I not have an April issue, April episode, but also it would mean that I would probably forget about all of this stuff the next time I do podcast. And we can't have that. But that's it. I hope you had a great April. I had a great April. And I will talk to you soon in May sometime. Kakete ano. Bye.
You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.